And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
All right, so Kilkenny are the Leinster champions. The famine is over. First time since 2015, Brian Cody's 16th Leinster title. Owen Larkin, welcome to the show. How does a man in Kilkenny, starved of Leinster success in the middle of a lockdown, how do you go about celebrating a Leinster title?
The same way as you normally would.
I suppose, a cup of tea.
A cup of tea and a few biscuits. And maybe a can at 9 o'clock before you go to bed.
That would be. You're never into celebrating Leinster.
No, we always celebrate. Make no mistake about that. We always celebrate. And I suppose every victory we used to celebrate with a couple of pints and maybe a couple of pints the following day. But things were different back then. There wasn't, you know, only 2 weeks to a game. We always probably had 3 or 4 weeks. So it'll be a bit different for the lads. But I'm sure they're delighted. And I'm sure Brian is delighted that some of the younger lads, I suppose, got to taste a bit of success, because you know, that's what drives you on that bit more. You want more and more of it. When you taste a small bit of it, you want more and more of it. And he'd be hoping that, you know, that's only the start of it now for the year.
It just seems, Damien, so unusual to think about some Kilkenny players needing a Leinster title, considering, you know, the dominance in Leinster. Like, it was what Dublin are doing in the football now. That's what Kilkenny had in the hurling. It's a weird one psychologically to think that some of those players kind of needed a Leinster title.
Yeah, well, it was a lot of them won their first Leinster title, so they did the last of it, so they did so. And if I was to be honest, I'd say that Galway threw it away. I couldn't actually believe it. Watched it at home, so I did with the family, so I did. And I thought we were cruising, so we were with up 5 pints. And next thing, Brian brought on a couple of subs, so I did. And I'd be honest, I'd have to say that I think Galway threw it away, but I think Brian Cody was in a state of shock after the match, my own opinion, that they won that game. I'd say he had to say to himself, how did they win it? So they did, but they have this never say die attitude. That's the ethos of the whole Kilkenny setup. So they didn't. Fair play to them, they won it, but it's another final that Galway are after blowing. And it's an issue with Galway hurling. So it is that we're not winning finals that we should be winning. The amount of training and effort has been going in, but well done to Kilkenny, fair play to them. They won another Leinster championship, but this is definitely one that Galway should have won.
It nearly comes down to the Kilkenny mentality, Owen. Are you looking at that game, like, when it's 20 points to 15, and, like, even Cody said it looked like the game was slipping away, and I thought the game was gone from Kilkenny at that stage. Are you thinking still at that stage, geez, we'll get a goal or two and it's not gone at all?
Yeah, well, I suppose your natural thought is it's kind of drifting away from you. And I had that thought myself, to be honest. And I knew looking at it, we weren't hurling that well. But still, there was only 5 pints in it. And, you know, a goal can change a game. And, you know, you're always thinking then, when you have TJ Reid and Richie Hogan comes on and maybe Colin Fenley is still around there, you're always thinking, you know, all we need is one chance and we'll get a goal or you know, we'll get a couple of pints to bring us back into it. But, you know, the natural reaction for you is to think that the game has gone from you, especially when you're not hurling the way lads can, and you're looking on and Galway are kind of dominating in all aspects of the game. But still, you know, a goal is a big score in a hurling game, and when you have the likes of those lads around, you're always capable of getting one, and ultimately that's what proved to be. You know, Richie Hogan came on and got an unbelievable goal, and then TJ, who was quiet for most of the game, got a brilliant goal as well. But still, Galway went ahead after that again. So, you know, you couldn't say that the goal has kind of done it, but it certainly gave the lads a lift that they needed and were able to drive on then.
Yeah, we have to talk about Richie Hogan's goal, Damien. Did you ever see, I have to admit, I never saw a goal kind of like that before. The ingenuity of it, to flick it past the goalie and never get it back in his hand, knowing he's just flicked it past the goalie and the goal is completely empty. All these things rushing through his head at the same time, and just kind of, I don't know how you describe, kind of spooned it back into the goals.
Yeah, well, see, as I've always explained to you, Wooly, about I would think that Richie Hogan does the world of wall ball and ball alley sessions. So his first touch and his striking is absolutely impeccable. And the most annoying part of that whole goal for me was Aina Murphy come out to the ball and he kind of cowardly out of the challenge, which
is
the ball to break through. But both teams were playing a sweeper, so they were, right? And Galway's sweeper was Pádraig Mannion, which when Richie came on, that's when we really needed Pádraig Mannion to drop back a notch to help out, right? But when the ball broke, Richie got onto it. And it was just instant striker's reaction was that he knew if he maybe tried to catch in his hand and turn, he might get hooked or the ball would get flicked away. So he chanced his arm, as the man says, with the little flick over the shoulder. And Joseph Cooney nearly got to it. But it was just a top-class goal, lads. Even being a Galway supporter and an ex-Galway hurler, you have to just stand up and admire that stuff. And then TJ then got the next ball and he turned Joseph Cooney and he put in the roof of the net. And Kilkenny were starting to cruise at that stage. Kilkenny actually missed four goals. They could have got four goals in the second half of that game, but Richie Hogan made some difference and he was a completely different player to go in on top of Dahi Burke in comparison to Colin Finlay, you know. But his first touch is top-notch. And to be honest, I won't lie to you. I was in a roundabout way, I was kind of delighted for him because what happened to him in last year's All-Ireland. I thought he shouldn't have been sent off. I thought I was wrong. So in a roundabout way, I was delighted for him that he did get that lovely goal.
No, I was delighted for him as well. I was more delighted for him when you saw him at the trophy presentation. He had a smile on his face, and I'm sure Owen, all those things were going through his head. That's a nice way to make up for that mistake last year.
Absolutely, yeah, because a lot of lads thought that last year's All-Ireland might have been the last we see him, with all the injury problems he's after having over the last number of years. But certainly, like, he's a really nice fella, and you know, we all know what the hurling quality he has, but he's a real nice fella as well. And, you know, you don't like to see that type of thing happening, and especially in an All-Ireland final. And like Damien said, I thought it was, you know, it was harsh enough in an All-Ireland final. Like, there has been worse kind of tackles and incidents in All-Ireland finals that have been...
Well, now, you do know it's only Kilkenny pundits that think that was harsh. Every other pundit unanimously agreed that it was sending off.
Yeah, they unanimously agreed that, you know, acting up around the kind of head is a red card. But, like, you know, I think all hurling people agree that it was kind of harsh in an All-Ireland final. He went to shoulder him and, you know, the elbow clipped him. But
what did you make of the Hugh Lawler pulling the hurl, Owen? Because this was an unbelievable catch by Niall Burke. And, you know, it was a cynical pull of the hurl. Now, some people were saying Niall Burke should have let the hurl go, is what I thought, and kicked it into the net and kind of put manners on Hugh Lawler that way. But there's no doubt it was very, very cynical. And Galway got nothing out of that, only a point.
Yeah, it was great defending, Woody. No, look, it's a problem. It is a problem in hurling. But, like, it's a defender's instinct. Your first instinct is to defend the goal. And, you know, it was a great catch by Niall Burke. And really, Galway should have got... He should have let go of the hurl and tried to kick it into the net, but like that's attacker's instinct. He should have done that. Like, as a defender, you're taught protect your goal at all costs, and Hugh Lawler wasn't letting go of that hurl, and rightly so. And I think, you know, it's hard to know whether a black card or, you know, something like that, or a sin bin or something would get rid of it out of the game. I don't think it would, because you take 10 minutes in the sin bin not to give away a goal. And you know, the black card, I think, is ruining football at the moment, and we definitely don't want to see that in hurling.
What would you think, Damien, if you say, right, forget about black card, forget about sin bin, that if you do something like that and prevent a goal scoring opportunity, it's a penalty?
Yeah, I agree with you there, Woolley, in a sense. But I would agree with Owen as well there, that I don't think it's going to change the game in defenders. It's near like rule number one is don't concede goals or don't concede soft goals. Niall Burke caught the ball. He was going towards the goal. Lawler had his hurl held. He should have just let go of the hurl, stayed going forward. And he had a man inside him, Niall, that he could have offloaded with the hand pass. It was an opportunity for a goal. So we should have got more out of it. But it can be very frustrating for a forward that maybe you can turn your man and then a defender just pulls you down and next thing not much happens to him. And I often find that in the opposite, if a corner forward did that to a corner back, he gets a yellow card very, very quick. So you can, but... And I think Niall should have did better. I won't lie to you. And I think Niall should have just let go of your man's hurl. Maybe took his 6 or 7, 8 steps. He probably would have got away with it and kicked it or even let it off inside. It was. But it's interesting. That was the only high ball, I think, that went into Niall Burke in the whole game. And like he, that's his strong feature, the aerial. And Galway were consistent with this short passing like this. But it can get a 9, but we should have got more of it. I think he should have dropped the hurl. I agree with Owen Larkin.
Right. What did you think anything of Kilkenny not using the dressing room zone? Like, I mean, I know they won the game, but I thought it was very unusual in Croke Park because obviously you've got the Hogan Stand dressing room and the Cusick Stand dressing rooms. You're completely separated, and you would have thought, you know, you couldn't get a safer environment rather than stand out in the Hogan Stand. I was thinking, geez, Kilkenny might start this game slow because they'll be freezing.
Yeah, it's certainly it was an odd one, all right, but I think, you know, Brian doesn't want to take any risks, or the management team doesn't want to take any risks as regards getting a, you know, a confirmed case or a close contact or anything like that, because as we've seen over the last number of weeks, even a close contact now, even if you are testing negative, you can't take any chance and you're gone for 10 days. So, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, Paddy Deegan might have been a close contact as well to someone, and that's why he missed out during the last weekend. So he just didn't want to take any chances. But like Kilkenny, I'm not so sure they started that slow, but they just never seemed to get into their stride. And you know, that was full credit to Galway. I thought Galway were the better team overall, and you know, you're sitting back after the game and wondering how did you win it, but obviously delighted to win it.
We'll talk about the match a bit more in part two, because Limerick won back-to-back Munsters for the first time since 1980, and John Kiley was given out after the game, Damien. He was saying that we've 10 players at home, which in my view is completely and utterly unacceptable, given that I have 20 reporters standing in front of me and I have 10 on my panel at home. I'm quite offended by that situation we've been put in. I can see where he's coming from, Damien. Obviously, this isn't a GAA issue. It's government guidelines. It probably only is very, very obvious for a final, you know, whereas it's not as cruel for, you know, a semi-final or a quarter-final. You imagine for an All-Ireland final, surely we'll be at the point where the whole panel is allowed to go and watch the match.
Yeah, Woody, would you believe this happened as well with Portumna years ago when we were in a Club All-Ireland final. So you're only allowed name, we'll just say, for example, 27 players. Like this, and this was just on the program. It was a club thing, and 7 players didn't get their name mentioned on the Croke Park official St. Patrick's Day program, which we used to always be very sensitive about, and we thought it was terribly unfair because you were all the one, you know. So I can see exactly what John Kiley is saying. He's probably going in every week, talking about the panel, the strength of the panel, the importance of the number one as number 35. And I couldn't back him enough and agree with him enough. I think it's wrong. Even if these players are, if it's just say, for example, if they were on a bus and they couldn't go, at least they should be allowed to drive and put them up into different corners of the stadium. Like, the stadium is absolutely massive, lads. So I just think it's wrong. It's just demoralising for a player that's given as much effort as their star player. So it is, and I just think it's terrible, and I feel sorry for any player that happens, because everyone has a family that are mad into the GA. So I couldn't agree more with John Kiley, and I think it's wrong, and I think it should be addressed, and then players should be allowed to go to the match, even if they're not togged, but they should be there. They're part of the setup.
Yeah, but you'd imagine Owen going to training on Tuesday night, and you're part of the panel. You're playing the 15 versus 15 matches, and you haven't been there on match day, and then you're landing to training on the Tuesday night. You'd feel like a real imposter, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, that's it. That's exactly it. You know, you hit the nail on the head there. They're going to be together at training. You know, there's 30 or 35 together at training on a Tuesday and Thursday or whenever they train. And like you said, they can't go to the match now because there's only so many allowed in. And John Kiley is totally right. You know, he said this cup won't be presented on Tuesday night, or get together with the whole panel. And as Damien said, I can guarantee that's the words he's using. You know, everybody on the panel is worth, you know, as important as number one. And that's what makes a good panel, is that everybody thinks to have a shout, that everybody is part of that unique setup. And, you know, I think when the government decided that Elite Sport could go ahead and the inter-county season could go ahead, they should have made some sort of package available for inter-county teams, because there's no inter-county panels that have only 24 or 25 players on the panel anymore. It's about 35 now, because they always want 15 and 15, and you know, you always have a couple of injuries, sickness and things like that. So I think you know, the GAA really should be putting a case forward to the government, especially when all their semi-finals and finals are coming up. It's not right, in my opinion, and it needs to be addressed.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. Is there an issue with hand passing in the game, Damien? Because we saw William O'Donoghue caught for throwing when it was a very clear hand pass. John Kiley went absolutely ballistic, and the referee was maybe 20 metres away, and William O'Donoghue had his back to him. So I don't know how he called that. And then you had Richie Hogan pass to Mossy Keown, which looked very like a throw, and he got away with that. Like, I mean, I don't know. Are players pushing this to the very limit where they're making it very hard on referees, and now referees are overly suspicious of them? Or, you know, are referees just turning... Some referees maybe being less lenient on them.
Yeah, as you just said, some referees are being less lenient. My own opinion is, on it, Colm, is that I don't think any inter-county hurler throws a ball, right? It's once the ball leaves your hand, even the slightest milliliter, right, that's a hand pass, right? And I seen it. So I did the last day with Limerick versus Tip. Do you know, Limerick got pulled for a goal, so on a hand pass, but then Nolan McGrath threw a ball into John McGrath. I just don't think that anybody is throwing the ball. That's my own opinion. They are hand passing it. The referee is looking for what he calls daylight. If you do a daylight hand pass, which you throw it up and you do a daylight hand pass, there's every possibility that it's going to get intercepted or you're going to get chopped down on. And the speed of hurling is going so fast and lads are running off the shoulder at pace that the hand pass. So my own opinion is, I don't think it's an issue, the hand passing. I think referees are blowing it out of proportion. So I do. And I think that the hand passes are being done is hand passes, only that it's been done so fast and lads are running at such pace. And I wouldn't pull a hand pass in inter-county hurling. My own opinion is that all they're doing is basically highlighting stuff that doesn't need to be highlighted and bringing attention onto themselves, the referee. So my own opinion is that no, there's not an issue, and I think they're all correct hand passes, so they are, and they should just let the game flow.
Right, let it go on. Is there much of a skill in it? Like, would it be that big of a deal in hurling if the underhanded pass, you know, if referees just kind of stop blowing?
The long and short of this, Colm, if you want to get a big, long hand pass, and when I say a long hand pass, to get that 20-25 yard, yes, then you need to let the ball release out of your hand and get a good, what we call, good strike into the ball, right? Yeah. But if it's a short, fast, snappy hand pass, which a player is running off your shoulder, then all you need to do is a little quick, little nip of a hand pass for your man to run onto it. So there are two different type of hand passes, and Owen will elaborate a little bit more, right? Because he was a great man to give hand passes well in his game, right? But if you want to do a big long one, the ball must leave your hand and you must hit it at an unbelievable impact if you want to do a long hand pass. But the short one has to be short and nippy. And as I said, I think the referees are drawing a lot of attention onto themselves. I don't personally think that there are any of these balls have been thrown, that it's just at such pace.
What do you think, Owen? Is it the end of the world if it's not a clear strike in motion for a little short one?
No, I don't think so. And I think when referees clamp down, but I think, Willie, this is not referees. I think this is a directive from Croke Park that came down from Croke Park to say that there had to be a clear strike in action. And we've seen over the course of the summer, last summer, I think it was, that referees were blowing most hand passes. And it was ruining the spectacle of the game because it was just stop-start. Every hand pass was nearly considered a throw. And I think Damien is right. I don't think there is many throws. There might be an odd one in a game, but I think the strike in action now is so fast that referees deem it to be a throw. And I think GAA needs to look at that. They're making a mountain of a molehill here, and they need to just get rid of that altogether because, you know, there's plenty more things that the referee has to look out for during a game without having to look out for that and making an eejit out himself if he makes a wrong call. They're being too hard on referees. Like, as I said, there's more things going on in the hurling game than one referee.
And Colm, the other thing as well, when the lads, Knurk and all these boys are training, and Sean Tracy and the boys are training the lads, they're training these boys with drills at such pace that this is where they're developing the quick hand pass. You know, it's coming from the training ground and the training drills that the quick hand pass, good, short, snappy, fast and everything. So that's where it's coming from. So I don't think any of these players are throwing at inter-county level. And maybe in junior level might be a different in club level, but not at inter-county.
Right.
As Damien says, Willie, the trainers, when they're demanding speed when they're training and all these drills that they're doing, they're demanding speed. So If they have a hand pass in a drill, they want it done at pace, and that's exactly what's happening.
Right. Okay. Yeah, it's interesting because it is annoying when they're blown up, especially if they got it wrong, like they did with William O'Donoghue that time. Come here, Damien. What did you think of Patrick Horgan's goal? Like, I mean, Jesus Christ! Everybody thought he was going to pass it off, and the minute the goalkeeper took a step left, he changed his mind in that very split second, Damien. Because I'd imagine as he's running through, he's thinking and passing and passing and passing, and he's able to change his mind at that very second that he saw that step. Like, I mean, incredible stuff.
Well, it was gas. It was what happened was a big massive rook had came right, and and next thing Breen got the ball and he got and he threw back the hand pass and he threw the hand pass back into Horgan's hand. And I don't think some of the tip players realized that Horgan actually had the ball and he went solo. But the interesting thing to remember about this clip, Woolley, is when Horgan starts soling with the ball, he starts soling at pace and the lads are running after him, right? But they, as you said, he changed his mind. But look at the corner that he put the ball into. He put the ball into the bottom left corner and the Cork goalkeeper, right, holds the boss of the hurl in the other corner. So for him to save that ball, he would have had to have brought the goalie hurl boss across his body into that corner, which made it impossible for him. I don't know if I'm making sense. And he put it low to the corner with a small bounce. And that was the real top class finish on it. So he soloed at pace. He kind of dummied and he jinxed a little bit to the left, but he put it into his bottom left corner where the Cork goalkeeper, he would have had to have changed across his boss of his goal or across his body to get. And that was a top class finish because he was going at full pelt. So it was actually a brilliant piece of skill and a brilliant goal again.
Jeez, it was one. I did, to be honest, I'm not obviously never played hurling, so that wouldn't have even crossed my mind. I just saw Gleeson taking a step. Would that cross your mind, Owen, when you're going in? Which side the goalkeeper's holding the hurl?
Well, it wouldn't cross your mind when you're going in. You'd obviously have a look at what goalkeeper you're going to be facing. And I was always told the same thing, even for penalties and all like that. You know, when a goalkeeper's standing up, look at what way he's holding the hurl. And you're going the opposite side because it's going to take him maybe a millisecond to get the hurl across his body. But I think it was a fantastic goal. He was running out of gas. He was after running 65 yards. He was running out of gas. And if he had to miss it, I think there'd have been questions asked of why he didn't pass it. But I think Niall O'Mara tracked him back and was gaining ground on him and very, very nearly got a hook. I'd say he'd be disappointed he didn't get the hook because that could have changed the game for Tipperary. You know, I thought Cork were very poor in the second half and that goal kept him in it in the first half and kept him in it for lots of the game. But it was an unreal finish. He's a joy to watch, Patrick Horgan, when he's in full flow. He's just, his wrist action is brilliant. And like Damien said, you would be looking out for the way the goalkeeper holds the hurl and definitely going to the other side.
Yeah, we'll give Cork a mention in performance of the weekend in part three. Another one was Davy Fitz's comments after the game, Damien. He said, the way I was abused today is not right and it should be dealt with. The abuse and the stuff that was thrown at me personally by one individual there today who was sent there to do it, this is the interesting part, is not right and has no place in hurling. Now, do you think, who would be sending this individual to do it?
Ah, oh, sure, Colm, I haven't a clue. Like Davy, this is like juveniles or when you're in national school. He said this and I said that, and he done this to me and I did that to him. And he, like, I don't know, like, who, like, does sometimes I often say, is there anyone else that can back up this story, number one, to see who it was? But sure, if someone was to have done it, I suppose it was the clear management. But like, I'd like to get. You'd like to get clarity on, did anyone else hear this going ahead? Like, you know, but anyways, I'll talk more about the Clare Cork game or Clare Wexford game. I just thought Clare were excellent. I thought the work rate was brilliant and I thought Wexford were extremely poor. And if you ask me, Wexford look exhausted. They look burnt. They were far from impressive this year. And I think that's what we should be talking more about regarding their performances as opposed to what someone said about someone. Sure, that probably happens in every sideline.
Woolley, that's a total deflection, I think, from Davy Fitz. Like, Wexford were so poor against Galway and they were even worse against Clare the last day. And he didn't want to answer questions as to why Wexford were so poor. So this is a deflection from him that I'm presuming himself and Brian Lowen don't get on, so I'm presuming he's aiming the shotgun there at Brian Lowen, sent someone into the stand to abuse him from start to finish. Total reflection in my opinion, that, you know, his Wexford team didn't perform at all this year. And really, if you look back over the last couple of years, has Davey really brought on Wexford in his 3 or 4 years there? I don't think there's many people could say he has.
Right, well, he brought them on last year, I suppose. They won Leinster and did well against Tip.
But ultimately, they came up short against Tip. They had the game won against Tip and fell asunder in the last 10 or 15 minutes. You know, they were a man up and retreated into their shell, and Tipperary came out and won the All-Ireland.
Well, you could make that argument. The thing about this abuse is that I don't understand, Damien, is what's somebody abusing Davey going to make any difference to the match? Like, I mean, Davey's not playing the game. Like, I mean, it doesn't even seem like it makes sense if a management team wants to abuse Davey. What bit of difference is that going to make?
The thing is, if this happened, right, number one, but the whole thing is that to rile up Davey, right, because he's easily riled up, that's number one, and to get inside his head. And basically, I would think that the whole meaning of it is that if they could get inside his head, that maybe his thinking would leave the game and his game plans and his whatever, and that he would be getting involved in stuff that's outside of the game, and he wouldn't be concentrating enough on the game to see, we'll say, if stuff was going on, we'll say, where lads are being beaten in different positions or making changes. So he would be burning too much of his energy on what we call touchline or sideline stuff that's outside of his control. And that would be the reasoning for it. It's like if you have a lad on the sideline and he's mouthing at you, and next thing you get involved in it, and you say to yourself, I should have been the bigger person, I shouldn't have got involved in it. But that's the only reason that I can see out of it. You know, but like Brian Lowen is a very well-respected person down here in Clare. Their trainer is Sean Tracy, which is my own club man. So he is, and they've lads, like, I just don't know. Like, I'd nearly like to get a name of the person that was going on like this. That's, once again, if this happened. But Wexford were extremely poor this year. Very, very poor.
Yeah, no, they definitely were. They definitely were. We'll talk a bit about Tony Kelly in performance of the weekend.
Lee Chin, I always have a thing on this. Like, Lee Chin couldn't start because he was injured. And my own opinion is, if you're good enough to come on, you should sometimes be good enough to start. That's just an old saying, but that is my opinion. If you're good enough to come on, you should be good enough to start. And he came on, and when he came on, even when I was watching it, he came on running fine. So, like, I don't know why he didn't throw him in from the start and try to get out of the blocks early, you know, as opposed to using him as an impact sub. So, like, he was a loss, but if you're good enough to come on, you should be good enough to start.
Yeah, but they were 10 points down, Damien, when he came on. So the game was over.
Yeah, the game was over. Maybe they thought they had bigger fish to fry and they get over it and Lee would be back all right for the next one. But they definitely didn't work out like that. But we'll finish up here, lads, in part one. Offaly out of the Christy Ring Cup. Like, a terrible result for Offaly. A huge win for Down on the other side of it. I don't know, like, I mean, geez, it hasn't gone that well on for Michael and, you know, in Offaly. They didn't make the Division 2 league final. Now they're out of the Christy Ring Cup. And, like, I mean, it's a poison chalice altogether by the looks of things, that Offaly job. It's hard to believe in 2018 they ran Kilkenny very close in the league quarterfinal in O'Connor Park. We do would have thought Michael Fennelly, a good name, good hurling brain, in with the experience of Johnny Kelly. You know, I don't think the Offaly players can start blaming managers or blaming anything. There's a serious issue with that senior team. And, like, are Offaly better off just, like, they can't forget about the senior team, but they have a good minor team this year to beat a very good Laois team. They hammered them, actually. Offaly need a minor All-Ireland. They need something to boost the confidence and, you know, have the county feeling like we're going in the right direction again.
Yeah, they definitely do. And I think isn't that the reason Michael Dignan took the job of county board chairman? I think he wants to try and build from the bottom up. Like, they're in dire straits at the moment at Offaly. There's no getting away from it. It didn't help them, you know, the year we had and COVID and things like that and restrictions and all that kind of stuff. I'm sure Michael would have. I'd like to get more time with the players and to get a few more bits done. But, like, it's disappointing for him because, as you say, like, he was a great hurler and he has lots of knowledge to give and things like that. But, like, it's going to be hard for him now going forward to pick these lads up and kind of move on with these lads. So I think possibly hurling needs some silverware at some age, at some grade, and they definitely need to start building from the bottom up again, because the foundations in Offaly hurling are just ran all time low, and you know, getting beat by down, I know it's a tough way to get beaten on penalties, but like, it should never, like, going into that game, Offaly would say they'd beat down no matter how bad they were. No disrespect to down, but it was a terrible loss for them, and you know, it's a terrible time for Offaly hurling.
Yeah, there's no doubt. It's hard to even figure out how much lower that they can slip at this stage, Damien. We've seen them slip through Leinster. We've seen them slip through Joe McDonagh. Now they can't get back out of Christy Ring. It's like, Jesus, like, is it, you know, like, where does this slide stop?
Yeah, and it's hard to believe they're going to be playing Christy Ring again next year, so it is. But just on the whole, you know, Michael Finley being manager and Johnny Kelly being trainer, you know, like, sometimes, lads, it doesn't matter who's over you. Sometimes it's down to the quality of players that you're dealing with, and it's just awfully an all-time low at the moment. They just are, and it's a pity, because when I was growing up, I used to love watching the Pilkingtons and the Dooleys and the Whelans and all these lads. They were household names, and they've fallen back, and basically it's going to take a long time for them to really regroup again and start. But they need to start putting I don't know, coaches and everything in place just to get them back up. But the players have only to look at themselves, and they're in a very, very low place, just being straight up, which is very low place. And it's going to be a while for them to get back up to what we call the top tier.
But yeah. I don't think the hurlers are the problem, Damien, in Offaly, because Offaly club hurling is kind of, like, it wouldn't be at the top of the charts, but it's middle of the road kind of thing. Like, the Offaly games up there, there'll be good games, and like, so I do think that they have the hurlers. Are they not just putting in the effort, or, you know, is it? It's hard to put your finger on it, because I think the hurlers are there. Are they just not working hard enough? Are they not committed? You know, I'd love to get an inside track on it to see maybe what Michael Dignan and maybe Michael Fenley think about it, because I think the hurlers are there, and you know, but I think there's some other issue there that's just cracking up.
I would disagree with you. I don't think the hurlers are in Offaly, and I think the likes of Leash have passed Offaly by a long way now. I know that we'll agree to disagree, but I don't think the hurlers are in Offaly. They're not good enough to compete. That's my opinion.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, because obviously, like, on Owen's point that the club hurling in Offaly, the Offaly County Champions would be evenly on a par with the Laois County Champions, and the top three or four would be similar. So I do take that point. Before we get into part two and talk about the matches, Owen, a little birdie tells me you bought a car off Damien in 2010. The question I have for you is, what the hell is the hurler of the year in 2008 doing buying a car? Surely there was a car with the garage there. Why didn't you go down there and try and get it for nothing and have Al Hayes Motors on the front door of the car?
Well, Wooly, that's what I did try to do, but Damien talked me into buying it.
Wooly, he got hurler of the year discount.
Well, see now, listen, Tony Kelly doesn't have to buy his car off Damien Hayes, I'd be sure.
No. Yeah, I went down with the intention of getting it for nothing, and my wife came with me at the time, and she says, I thought you were getting this for nothing, and now we ended up spending 25 grand on it.
Well, listen, he's a good salesman. My little sister bought a car off him as well, so we'll put this down to Damien.
Wooly, it was a lucky car. He won lots of medals with it.
All right, we'll come back and we'll talk about the matches.
A lot of people do say, what do you love about hunting? They do say. Is it the fresh air? Is it the great outdoors? Is it the thrill? No. I just love killing things. Right? Absolutely.
All right, so Limerick 25 points, Waterford 21 points. Surprising result, really, for people who might have thought Limerick might have pulled away here. Owen, it was like league hurling, really, wasn't it, Owen? It was full of rooks and full of rooting and kind of, I don't know, it just reminded me of a league game back in March.
Yeah, it did, and I think the kind of weather that was in it and the lights going on then as well kind of sent you back to March as well in a league game. But I think it started... the intensity of the game started as if it was a league game, you know, no kind of atmosphere or anything going. And it was only kind of after half time it really got going. But like, Limerick will be delighted this morning. They didn't play well at all yesterday, I think, and just really ground out the win. But like, Waterford really surprised me yesterday. I thought Limerick would win that easily, but like, Waterford, you could see they were really, really up for the game. And I think Liam Cahill has done a very, very good job with Waterford. You know, it's his first year there. He's built a nice young athletic team with a couple of experienced lads there. But I think the burning question on everyone's lips is Austin Gleeson. I think, like, you know, he got 3 or 4 great points yesterday, but was taken off at about 10 minutes to go. He's just not the same hurler he was a couple of years ago. And I think there has been a lot of pressure put on him over the last number of years to kind of, you know, to drag Waterford through games and things like that. And the Hurler of the Year, he spoke about the pressure he felt with the Hurler of the Year tag. And but I think they need to find, you know, a settled position for him and where's his best position and just leave him there, let him work into games and get a bit of confidence into him. Because I think if they can get him hurling the way he can hurl, Waterford will be a serious team.
I think just on that point, Owen, is that like, Waterford came back into it well and got it back to a draw, but they're a little bit lightweight up front, aren't they? You couldn't really see them pushing on, and Limerick dominated the last quarter, you know, in defence. They've a lot of little small forwards. They're missing, you know, they need Shane Bennett back, they need Padraig O'Mahony back, you know, and then it might free up Austin Gleeson a little bit, you know, if they had. I know Stephen Bennett played very well, but I can see Austin Gleeson just not having the quality around him. Would that be an argument?
Yeah, it could be, but on the other side of that one is they're inexperienced as well. If you go through their forward line, they're very, very inexperienced. Like, Desi Hutchinson is only back from England's, you know, first championship season. Jack Prendergast isn't in the corner, first championship season. The two wing forwards, first championship season, and you have Stephen Bennett then as well. So, like, Stephen Bennett is relatively young as well. I know he has a couple of seasons behind him, but he's a relatively young man, and then obviously they have Austin Gleeson there as well. So if you could get the likes of Padraig O'Mahony back, who has been there, done it, you know, wore the t-shirt and, you know, has lots of experience there, I think they do have the firepower. I just think it's going to take time. As I said, they're inexperienced. They'll gain a huge amount from yesterday's defeat, and I think that there'll be a serious outfit going forward if they can learn from yesterday relatively quickly. They're going to be a serious team in a couple of years.
Yeah, they're a good team, aren't they, Waterford, Damien? Like, I mean, you know, Conor Prunty had a great battle with Galland. Like, I mean, Callum Lyons did well. Tadhg de Burka, we know how good he is. Did Callum Lyons and Kevin Moran follow their men, and Tadhg de Burka dropped off his man? Is that kind of how they did it? Because we know this whole debate of what do you do with the Limerick half forward line.
Yeah, so I would first, once again, I'd say I think Liam Cahill is doing a great job down there. I would have been the same there as Owen. I would have thought that Limerick would have tore strips into them, you know. But Waterford, geez, they really, really impressed me now. So just saying, maybe it's a bit of a kick up the backside that Limerick needed. Last year, they didn't play well against Kilkenny, and next thing they were out of the championship. Yesterday, they didn't play as well as they would have liked, and Waterford gave them absolutely lots of it. And even at the very end of the game, Waterford got a hand pass intercepted, so they did. And if that ball went inside, they could have got a goal. But Waterford really, really hurled well. And as you said, what happens is the wing backs, yeah, Moore and the boys, they man-marked their wing forwards, so they did. And the centre-back, what's his name again?
Tadhg de Burka.
Yeah, he falls back, kind of. So when the midfielders kind of picks up the centre-forward, they're kind of playing, if I can see Waterford, they're playing kind of with 5 forwards, and their centre-forward drops out into kind of the midfield role. So he does, and de Burka goes back then as a sweeper. And like, he's been playing that role for so long now, he could do it in his sleep, and he's absolutely playing towering stuff. Oh, geez, he's like, this guy's after coming off a cruciate injury. Like, so you can only imagine the amount of effort and hours in the gym that he's done. But he's been playing absolutely brilliant stuff. But as well as you were saying there about Austin Gleeson, like, he's a great hurler. No one is denying that. But I often wonder, right, and this could be just a different argument. I find that an awful amount of the modern players, and Owen, you might agree with me on this, that there's more pressure being put on them because they're getting all these little sponsorship deals, and there's more pressure being put on them with advertising t-shirts and food groups and lean gain dinners on the go on Instagram and Facebook, that they're not concentrating enough on their game of hurling. And sometimes I think there's a lot of side issues going on. And often I just see the likes of Austin, he's always advertising stuff. Maybe if he just concentrated more on his game of hurling, along with many other players in the country, that a lot of time is affecting their game.
It's a good point, yeah, it's a good point. And I never really thought about it, but now that you say it, you know, you always see Austin Gleeson. Actually, it was only last night, I was flicking through Instagram again, and I seen something else. He was a new brand ambassador of, I can't think of what it was now, but I just said to myself, cheers.
The only brand ambassador I was for Al Hayes. That was the only perk that I was getting when I was hurling. I had a car going training, but it's like every hurler in the country, and it's affecting their games. I don't care what you say, Wooly, and it's happening with footballers. Like their number one priority goal is to perform for their county to the best that they're able to. Okay, let's get the couple of perks that they're able to get. But jeez, there's so much. And if you take on to be an ambassador of something, like you're going into side issues that might be a nine the night before a match and getting a text message from whoever the marketing person said, will you make sure to put this up? Will you put this up? You've put this up on your Instagram page. And I think some of the players out there need to concentrate more on their game of hurling. It's happening with a couple of the Cork hurlers as well. A lot of the Dublin footballers, all these sideshows. And I think if lads concentrate on their hurling more, they get a lot more out of it.
I'm all for the sponsorship and brand ambassadors as well, Wooly, but businesses now, it's not like years ago, say, if you got a car, you just drive the car around and, you know, it had the name on the side of it. Businesses want you to do stuff for them. You know, as Damien said, they want you to put up stuff on Instagram, they want you to do question and answers things. You know, they want their twopence worth for giving you the car now, and they're dragging you here, there and everywhere. And like Damien said, that can be a distraction.
Yeah, maybe it is now, because it doesn't seem to affect Tony Kelly and a couple more. We'll mention them in part two. I want to go to a more boring topic on the Limerick puckouts, because Damien Waterford, or I'll throw this one to you, Owen. Waterford, they conceded a lot of the kick out, or the puckouts. And is that the right thing to do with Limerick? Instead of pushing up and letting Quaid go wherever he wants, give it to the cornerback and almost back off him. And go, right, you're going to have to give it to someone sometime. We're backing off you. The pitch is getting smaller and smaller. Your options are getting less and less. Instead, if you go push right up on him, he'll just hand pass it over your head and take a 1-2.
Yeah, I think you're right, Woody. I don't think, and there was lots of the puckouts went to Kyle Hayes and Dermot Burns yesterday as well. And if you give it to the wing backs, they're looking for Galan. They're looking for a run from Galan, either left or right. And more often than not, you know, they get it into them, and then you're in danger. I think the only way to play Limerick is the way we played Cork in 2006 is back off them, let the cornerbacks have it, and don't run at them. Let them come up the field and make a decision then. Because I think if you give their wing backs and midfielders a bit of space to Aaron Gillan, you're asking for trouble straight away.
So that's it, Damien. What you end up doing is, like, the cornerback is coming out with the ball. He wants you to commit to him,
yes,
so that it makes his decision a lot easier. Whereas if you're backing off and back him off him, now he's on the half-back line. He's like, oh, shit, will I shoot? Or, you know, there's no options available to me because the pitch is much smaller.
Yeah, so
he's getting a nosebleed, Wooly, when the cornerback comes out.
Yeah, exactly.
So when they get the ball, the cornerback, they're coming out towards it. Usually what happens is the corner forward goes towards him. So the cornerback will break the challenge. No matter what, he will break it. So now what all the new modern trainers are telling him to do, when your man is coming towards him, you kind of sidestep backwards. So next thing he tries to go out around you, and when he tries to go out around his solo, then you're able to come in with the flick of the hand or the flick of the hurley and put him under pressure, and sometimes it gets broken down. Or you're putting them under pressure because the wing back could come towards you and the wing forward. So next thing you could be 2-on-2. So it's definitely easier to reverse back and let him make the runs because he's expecting you to come towards him to break the challenge. So you're just putting the corner back on the spot and to see what will he do. So it's putting more pressure on him. And often then, if the corner back gets a rush of blood to the head, he'll drive it long. And that's exactly what a lot of teams want. They want the ball in the air where it's a competitive battle in the air where you'll always back your own half-back line to win that ball in the air or to break it.
Yeah, it's almost like trying to discuss here, Owen, we do it on the show, about how do you counteract Limerick? And like, I mean, you know, chasing around after them all doesn't really work. They're playing it around you like it's a piggy in the middle type situation. So like, I mean, we know there's very, very few faults to Limerick's game. That could be a chink in the armour that Waterford showed yesterday.
Yeah, I think it is. And I think the more I look at Limerick, the more I think you're at nothing trying to physically match up to him or run around after him and try man mark him. You know, to a certain extent, I think, you know, they need to be marked tight. But I think that could be it. If you clog up the middle third, your half back line and midfield, clog that up with bodies, draw out your full forward line out of the half forward line, and let the cornerbacks take the ball, and let them run up the field and let them have to make a decision, you know, whether they want to try and break a tackle out around midfield or just lump the ball in long and you have bodies back there then. I think that's the only reason, that's the only way I see Limerick being beaten this year, because, as I said, they didn't play well yesterday, but still dug out a win. And, you know, I think they won't be as bad again the next day, and that's frightening to say, because the amount of players that came on yesterday and made an impact. Seamus Flanagan came on, first touch over the bar. Adrian Breen came on, first touch over the bar. You know, the strength and depth they have on the panel is frightening. And, you know, if one or two lads are not firing, off they come and on the way to come and make an impact straight away.
Yeah, you made a point, Damien, and you're right. Like, I mean, their first performance that they got caught in last year was Kilkenny. Like, they were there for the taking yesterday, weren't they? Like, they had seven wides in the second half. David Dempsey with a terrible easy miss. Dermot Burns with an easy miss. Keane Lynch with an easy miss, almost in a row. And you got the feeling, Jesus, it's there for Waterford if they want it.
Yeah, absolutely. As I said, I was really impressed with Waterford. They absolutely got stuck into them, and they took on Limerick. And Limerick didn't really like them taking them on, you know. But the one thing about Limerick is, like, Limerick have great work rate, and they've all lovely short passes and stick work and heads up hurling and all that. But, geez, sometimes they hit an awful amount of long range wides. And I've said this before on the show, Woolly, that the other thing is, they don't go for goals. You know, they're happy enough tapping away pints. And like Aaron Gillan scored a goal the last day, so he did, right? But they'd stay tapping pints. And then I often think they don't use their inside full forward line enough. Like, their inside full forward line yesterday, including the sub that came on, right? They got 9 pints from play, so they did yesterday. And sometimes I feel they don't use the boys inside. Aaron Gillan, like, he's some target man, whether he's on the edge of the square or going out to the side, whether it's high, low or whatever. But the Waterford boys got stuck into them, and as I said, they didn't have it all their own way, and it was touch and go there, especially in the last quarter, to know who was going to win this game. And then, as Owen said, it was interesting in that in the last quarter they took off the likes of Austin Gleeson, so that in that game, when there was 15 minutes to go, could they have thrown him in full forward just to see maybe would he win a high ball or anything like that. But Limerick didn't play well. They won the Munster Championship. Well, the one thing about this squad of players, they love winning competitions, and that's their second competition to win now in the space of 3 weeks. So it is, and now they're on course to win the All-Ireland. I think they're the team to beat, and I think they got to kick up the backside yesterday because they didn't play as well as they would like, but they still won.
Yeah, played 11 games so far, 2019,
and
won all 11.
Yeah, look, there's no question. I went up last year up to the All-Ireland semi-final, and I couldn't see Limerick or Kilkenny beating Limerick. And they were totally off that day. But Kilkenny, you know, just got stuck into them as well. But just going back to yesterday, Woolly, with about 5 minutes to go, there was about 2 or 3 points in it. Limerick were ahead by 2 or 3 points. And Waterford started trying to create goals and running at Limerick, and came out of the attacks with no score. And there was a couple of them that were easy tap-overs, and they just tried to create goals. And that comes from inexperience as well. You know, the inexperienced lads were kind of panicking. You know, we need to get a goal to get back into this. And they could have just kept tapping their pints, and it could have been a different situation then, you know, from 70 minutes or 72 minutes, if they had to take their pints and they were level going in. But Limerick always had that cushion of 2 or 3 pints, and, you know, were just able to keep them at arm's length. But like you say, if you could get the Pádraic Mahdys back, you know, if he was throwing that ball yesterday, it would have been a pint. You know, he'd have kept tapping over his pints because he knew there would have been plenty of time left. But like I say, you know, Waterford will come on a huge amount from their display yesterday and the way they stood up to Limerick and got stuck into them. And, like, it's going to be a hell of a quarter finals next week, and the semi finals are going to be even better.
Yeah, they definitely will. You know, in a weird way, you come out of the Munster final going, Limerick will be happy because they won. Waterford will be very happy because they performed, you know, very well, almost above expectations. And in a weird one, Damien, Kilkenny will come out of the Leinster final because they won it, obviously, delighted. But Galway will come out of that game thinking, geez, we were the better team for most of that game there.
Oh, yeah, well, like, there's no doubt about it. Limerick winning the Munster Championship, they'll be delighted, but they'll be disappointed in the performance. Waterford lost it, and they'll be delighted with the way they performed, and they got stuck into it, and the blooded players, and they'll gain confidence. Kilkenny will be delighted because they won a match that they shouldn't have won. And I'd say Brian Cody and the management team are nearly saying to themselves, how did they win it, and what's their best team? And Galway now are going into a quarter final against Tipperary, and they're now saying to themselves, will they win it? Will they not win it? They were the best team in the Leinster final and they blew it. So they're wondering now, what way will them lads' heads be like this? So it's a very tricky one. Galway and Tipperary is going to be 50-50. Any of them two teams could win. A lot of it will be down to weather conditions. It's on a 1:15, correct me if I'm wrong, in the Gaelic grounds on Saturday. The one advantage is that the Galway management won't have too far to travel. So they won't. It's touch and go there, and as Owen said, it'll be two right good quarterfinals. But it's going to be, the big thing is how Clare are going to get great confidence, but where is Galway's heads going to be? And I still think that Galway don't know what their best 15 is.
Do you think that, Owen, that Galway don't know what their best 15 is? Because, like, I mean, their defence were completely dominant in that game. Maybe what to do with Paul Rickmanion might be up for grabs. I think Galway do know their first 15 or their best 15. Like, I mean, you look, Walter Walsh, Colin Fennelly and TJ were dominated for most of that game. Like, I mean, there's an awful lot of positives for Galway coming out of that game.
Absolutely, yeah. I think they do know their best 15. I think Shane O'Neill and his management team will be, you know, disappointed they didn't win, because obviously they should have won the game. They were the better team. But I think there's huge positives to take out. And the other positive that they'll take out of it as well, Tipperary are not firing on all cylinders either. You know, this is an aging team. You take Páraic Maher, Jamie Callaghan, Brendan Maher, you know, there's one or two more. There's a lot of miles on those lads' legs. And I think Páraic Maher was taken off the week before. I think it was the first time he was ever taken off. So, like, they're not firing on all cylinders. I think Galway will have a right cut off Tipperary, and I wouldn't be surprised if Galway overcame Tipperary next Saturday. I think, you know, if they can get that level of performance next Saturday, they will take Tipperary. But the thing about it is, they need to finish off games, and they need to finish off teams when they have the chance. They had the chance to put Kilkenny away, missed a couple of easy chances when they were 4 or 5 points up, and next thing, Kilkenny get 2 goals and a couple of points and take them at the end. They need to get that ruthless streak into it. But I think that has been a problem for Galway over the last number of years. You know, they win games by a pint or two that they should be winning by 6 or 7 points, and they lose games they should be winning. They just need to be, yeah, they need to find that ruthless streak, and they need to find it quick for next Saturday, because I think they have a huge chance of taking Tipperary.
In a weird way, Damien, you'll say, oh, Galway threw it away, and then they got hit with those sucker punches of goals and responded to them by scoring 3 in a row. And that's very impressive, and teams that have no character don't do that. The problem is maybe in their own minds they said, oh, we're back in control here, and switched off again.
Yeah, well, that's it. It looked that way. It looked like they were, to an extent, that they were afraid to push on. So they were, you know, and as you said, we got hit by 2 sucker punches of 2 goals. So we did, and then we went on and we went ahead again. So we did. So it's as I said, yeah, we threw away that match. Just a lot long and short of it, Colm. And I think Kilkenny were surprised that they won it by. But on the Galway team, like, I would have Aidan Hart on my team. Simple as that. You're asking, like, do Galway know their strongest 15? Aidan Hart would be on my team. David Burke would be on my team. Jason Flynn would be on my team. So there's a couple of players there. They're in and out the whole time. There's a couple of positioning areas that are up for grabs there on who's in what position. What. So sometimes I think it'll be a different team that'll line out for Galway the next day against Tipperary. And Tipperary still don't know their strongest 15 either. And number two, I think it's very interesting that Bubbles isn't featuring at all. Now, I know he has summered well, we'll put it this term.
That's an understatement.
Exactly, but like, he should need to be getting more out of him, but Galway are going to be disappointed, Colin. Like, we should have won that game and we didn't. And Galway are training too hard not to be winning stuff. That's basically my argument. But yeah, hopefully they will take something from the game and the positives out of it. But geez, when it's disappointing when you lose finals that you should win.
Yeah, definitely. Aidan Hart did very well on Owen Cody, who was causing problems in the first half. He wrapped him up.
But even Colin Loftus was having problems, right? He was having problems in the corner. Like, my opinion, like, was just maybe a simple switch with the two cornerbacks. You know, just switch to one cornerback over to the other side and it could have solved the whole thing. Maybe there would have been no need for the likes of Aidan Hart to come in at all. And then, like, the likes of Johnny Cohen, who had a wonderful first half, he was completely out of it in the second half. And then when David Burke came in, he injected two scores straight away. Like, I'm a big fan of David Burke, so I think he's a great player, and I'm just very surprised he's not on the team at all.
I think this is a tactic from the Galway management that they play their first 15 and then they want the experienced lads, the likes of David Burke, Jason Flynn, these types of lads to come in and see out the game for them. You know, lads that have been there, done it. You know, the Galway team are relatively inexperienced, you know, given the, you know, there's a couple of players that have been around for a couple of years, but I think this is a tactic that they want the likes of David Burke and Jason Flynn to come out and finish the games. Now, it didn't happen the way they would have wanted last Saturday, but I do think that that's what the Galway management are looking for.
Oh, yeah, Jason Flynn's only a young lad.
I know. I realise he's only a young lad, but he's there a good few years and he's a lot of experience.
Yeah, I think he should be on the team as before Conor Cooney. I think he's a way better hurler than him.
Conor Cooney has been struggling for form the last couple of years. Yeah. He seems to have got off the bye. Like, I remember watching Conor Cooney a couple of years ago and one touch over the bar. Conor Cooney could score 8 or 9 points from play. And, you know, I don't think he scored the last day.
No, he scored 1 point the last day. He had a great Leinster final against Wexford where he ran amok. He was playing brilliant stuff that season. I want to mention quickly before we move on here, Owen, about Niall Brazil. He came on in the forwards. He plays in the halfback line for James Stevens. Am I right? He was lively when he came in.
Yeah, he's a very good hurler, Wooly. He would have started his career with the club in the forwards. He was a minor at the time and he used to come on in the forwards and we played him in the forwards. Last year in 2019, we started playing him in the backs last year, and he actually hurled centre back on TJ Reid in the semi final, or this year, should I say?
Yeah, I was watching that. Too.
Yeah, he's a fantastic hurler, but he's so versatile. He's lots of pace and power, and you know, he's going to be a good one for the future. He's still very, very young. I think he's only 20. So, but he's a brilliant, brilliant hurler.
Right, okay, right. We'll come back here, lads, with performance of the weekend.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we have a farm back home, so we have a big farm back home, and we have cattle and sheep, and we have a few donkeys as well. So we had a couple of filly donkeys. So I brought them down, and so we actually sold them to, I think I had four donkeys on the day, and we sold them to a man from Wexford. So we did. So there's the piebald donkey still there, and there's the traditional donkey, and there's the Spanish donkey, and then there's the
Spanish donkey.
They call it. Yeah, you see them on the beaches and everything. So yeah, you can actually one time the donkey was useless, right? But now some people have started to get back into them, because you can use them for headage, and it's used towards your bonuses, your grants. A donkey in Eden, and a donkey in Eden Palace.
That's performance of the weekend. I want to start off with Michael Breen. He scored 5 points for Tipperary. He destroyed Luke Mead. A complete mismatch physically, I suppose. And geez, I don't know, Owen, about Michael Breen. He's the ultimate on his day type of player, in that when he's on song, he's very, very hard to stop.
Yeah, he is. As you said, he's physically a powerhouse, and he has the pace to go with it as well. And like Luke Mead the week before was unbelievable for Cork. You know, he was probably man of the match for Cork the week before, and totally out of the game. Michael Breen destroyed him 5 points from play from midfield. Like 5 points from play, I don't think he ever scored 5 points, and I played in the forwards all my life. but like when Michael Breen is on song, he's a serious player. But don't forget, Willie, Michael Breen didn't start the game for Tipperary the week before.
No.
So, you know, was he out of form? You know, was he carrying an injury or is there something else amiss? But he came on the week before and had an impact, and obviously a huge impact last Saturday. And, you know, you'd expect him to take his place the next day as well. But he's a serious hurler. When he does hit the heights he hits, but he can't have his off day too.
Well, that's the thing. For someone who can be so good, sometimes you see him not making the team and you wonder, does he blow hot and cold or kind of what's wrong? He hit Damien Cahill on the shoulder, Damien, there in the first half. And it was a routine enough shoulder. Like, I mean, Liam Sheedy went absolutely mental on the sidelines celebrating this shoulder. And I was like, Jesus, Liam, calm down now. I know he was probably trying to get his team going because Tipperary were dreadful in that first half, but it was a slight overreaction for what wasn't exact. It's not like it was a Paddy Maher on Joe Canning type of hit here.
Yeah, but basically, by Liam doing that, he was trying to get a message out to his players that this is how you do it, and to get stuck into Cork, and you know, he'd be speaking about the work rate and the hassling and everything. But it was a good shoulder out over the sideline on Callan. Just on Michael Breen, Woolley, Tipperary wouldn't have won the game only for Michael Breen. The last day, he was absolutely brilliant. Like, you would have been expecting maybe a different player to stand up, maybe John McGrath or someone maybe to drive them across the line like this. But it was Michael Breen. Like, his first point from play out along the sideline beside Liam Sheedy was unbelievable over his right shoulder. So Michael Breen he's the type of hot and cold player. He reminds me so much of Cathal Mannion. He can score five points and he could score none, or he could score one, or he'll score none, or he'll get taken off. Whatever, but only for Michael Breen, Tip wouldn't have won the last day. It's as simple as that. He'd have a powerful performance.
Yeah, you mentioned Cork in that game, Owen. Like, I mean, holy shit. At halftime there, that game should be done and dusted, really. They'd done enough work. They'd got the goal. Tip weren't playing well. You have a gale force win behind you. There's no real excuse for not winning that match.
No, but this is the Cork of the modern era, Woody. You know, they're just a little bit, they're just lacking something. They're a little bit soft, I think. You know, if you stand back and let Cork hurl for 70 minutes, you're in for a beating. But if you can, you know, just get stuck into them, get in their faces and things like that, you know, you have a good chance of beating Cork. They're just missing that, I don't know, that maybe that Niall McCarthy kind of a hurler that just goes through the dogged work and, you know, sets up everything around them. They don't have anyone that does that. They're all lovely, skillful hurlers and they don't really have any dog in the team. And like, as you said, Tipperary were awful in that first half and the game should have been done and dusted at halftime. Cork should have been out of sight. But they weren't. Tipperary just, even though they were playing bad, they were in their faces. They were, you know, hooking, blocking, working, just staying in the game till the momentum changed and they could find their rhythm. But like, there's something missing in Cork over the last number of years. You know, I don't know how many years it is since they won in All-Ireland now, 15 or 16. And like, it's proven on the field again last Saturday evening. It's just unexplainable, really. And I'm sure Kieran Kingston is sitting at home today wondering, you know, what do we have to do with this team to kick on? Because this is a second stint at, and I'm sure he thought he'd come in and you know, find that extra piece, but he hasn't found it yet.
Any positives, Damien, for Cork, do you think? Like, I mean, Harnady was outstanding when the game needed it in the second half. It wasn't enough. They finally found a position where Tim O'Matney can consistently play well in at wing back. Anything else? Like, I take Owen's point. Like, I mean, again, maybe the fighting spirit in the second half when they... Jesus, I think there was only two winning at half time and the Gale Force win. You should be winning it at that stage.
They should have been pushing on. Just a question. I know sometimes you might say maybe I should know this, but where was the Cadigans? Just, are they injured or...
They're injured, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, just I didn't see... They weren't... both of them weren't listed as subs even for the last two games. But look, we all know the Cork are lovely stick hurlers and they've all the wrists and they've... You know, when a move works out and they get a lovely score, it looks fantastic. But I think just Cork going forward, they're going to have to find one or two what you call rough, aggressive players that's going to really win battles and dog them out like this. Maybe find one or two players, especially up the middle, but they're just not winning games, and they should be, because they have some lovely hurlers and they need to get more aggressive for next year. I think that's their biggest challenge.
I think Declan Dalton on at one stage ran in soccer style. I'd never seen that before in a game of hurling. Where there was a man inside him, and he tried. I think he got a free in for a sliding tackle. It was almost like a bloody soccer match. But what's he meant to do in that situation? There's a man inside him. He's got no hurl in his hand. Does he put it in between his two legs and try to scoop it up so he can hand pass it inside? Like I've never seen a lad continue on. I've seen it in Gaelic football, but in hurling, I don't often see a lad continue on soccer style with a slitter on the ground.
Yeah, it's a hard one to call because, like, if you stop and try and flick it up between your legs, there's lads saying, will you just kick it into your man? But, like, yeah. I think he probably should have tried to kick it across to whoever was inside him. I think it could have been Shane Kingston inside him, maybe. But it was a difficult one for him because he was after losing his hurl a fair bit out, and he was kind of dribbling in with it. And he was lucky enough, too, to get the free because I didn't see any really sliding tackling at all. It was kind of a soft enough free, but I think it was kind of nearly just for a slap across the ankles. But you're going to get them if you're trying to dribble a hurling ball in towards the large parallelogram. But it was a difficult one for him. But you know, I think just throw a boot at and see where it goes. Maybe is the best option.
Yeah, maybe don't dribble it anyways on the way in. Richie Hogan deserves a shout out, lads, for performance of the weekend. We have to mention Tony Kelly here. Lads, this is freaky, the kind of performances he's putting in. Maybe the fact that he doesn't have lads around him to share the load just allows him to do it all on his own. 145 in three matches. Like his goal was very unlike Wexford. Imagine being able to win a puck out, give it to Tony Kelly and have nobody to stop him running straight down the middle, Damien. I'd say he couldn't believe his luck for that one. Probably the 3 points in the first half were just complete freaky points altogether.
Well, the 3 points in the first half were just unbelievable, right? And then he got a point in the second half where, if you remember, he got the ball in his own half back line and he soloed up the field, right? Took on his man, the centre back for Wexford, right? He stayed going. You could see that he was after losing the centre back. Stayed going. And then off the hurl, swung it over the bar like a free. It was just phenomenal. And then his goal was basically hand passed into him. And if you watch the goal again, when he caught the ball, when he got the goal, he brought his left hand into his chest and he took 4 or 5 of the longest strides to get his running motion into full motion like this, and then threw the ball out into the hurl and he put it into the bottom right hand corner of the net with the bounce first into the back of the net, and that was a game over. Wexford were making maybe a slight bit of a comeback, but see Kelly, I suppose he was under a little bit of pressure. There was Peter Duggan was around. I suppose there was a lot of talk about Peter Duggan. Peter Duggan got the freeze. It took a little bit of spotlight off him, so did. But like I've been saying it for years, that Tony Kelly has been a phenomenal hurler. He's one of the best in the country. He's been showing unbelievable form with Ballyhea, so he did. And I suppose then Ballyhea went all the way to the club at Ireland. You remember Woolley? I went up and I'd done a show with you up in Crow Park, and that year I suppose he got maybe a burnout, as in just he was on the go nearly for 2 years, and then people were doubting him like this. But the performances that he's putting in this year are just unbelievable, and the scores he's getting. He's the first man on the All-Star team. Like, he has his All-Star nailed already with the performances he's been putting. And as you said, maybe because some of the other forwards aren't as up to the level that he requires, and he says to himself, what's the point in passing it? I'll shoot myself, and if it goes over, if it doesn't, sure, maybe he might say to himself, they had to put it wide in us. Do you know? But
the most of them are going over, though. That's the thing. There's not too many of them going wide.
Yeah,
no, they're going.
He's pointing in the very corner, we'll say, almost on the in line. Like, he swung it off. He struck off his left, and it we'll say curling between the posts. They're just the scores he's getting are just unbelievable.
Owen, does Brian Lohan deserve credit for these performances? Because a lot of the time, I remember under Davey or even under the joint managers, he was playing centre half forward. He'd be back in his own half back line. Yeah. Like Lohan's kind of playing him from midfield on up, and sometimes in the full forward line, in the half forward line. Like Brian Lohan deserves some credit potentially for these performances.
Yeah, he probably does a small bit, but as you seen him the last day, well, he as the point that Damien was alluding to there, like he picked that up in his own half back line and ran forward with it. So I think that's just Tony Kelly. I don't think probably Davey had him back there or Brian Lohan has him back there. I think he's hunting for the ball. He just wants the ball, and wherever the ball is, he's going to be around. And
as far as I can see, Owen, I think that Kelly has been told to kind of stay in the full forward line, right? And he was put into the full, but he's given the freedom of the pitch from midfield up. I'd say they're kind of said to him, look, you can go anywhere you want from midfield up to the full forward line. We don't want to see you back in the backs. And you can run off lad's shoulder and demand the ball to be released to you. But you can go anywhere you want. You have the freedom of the park, but don't go back in the backs. That's, I'd say, is what Brian Lohan and Sean Tracy's message is to Tony Kelly.
Well, if I ever do, it's working a treat, because like it's unbelievable watching him play. And, you know, I suppose it doesn't say a whole lot for the Clare team that Tony Kelly is getting probably three quarters of the scores. But like it's freakish what he's doing. As Damien said, it's the first name on the All-Star team, and I'd say if they get to a semi-final, he could be the hurler of the year as well. Very
good. Oh, yeah.
There's every possibility that they will get to the semi-final.
Yeah.
I find it hard to see it. I Wexford were so bad the last day, you know, and I understand Clare betting the, you know, 10 or 12 points or whatever it was, but like I just can't see Clare going any further. It's just, you know, if you stop Tony Kelly, like, where do Clare get their scores from? And you can be guaranteed Watford are not going to allow that happen next week. They'll have some man marking Tony Kelly and just to dog him into the ground and not let him hurl, because you couldn't but take notice of Tony Kelly last week. And if Watford are going to this weekend and don't have a plan for Tony Kelly, they're in trouble.
Yeah, we thought that's what Wexford would do as well. Everyone has a plan for Tony until they have to try and mark him. Here's a question for the two of you here now, and take your own county colours off. And you're picking a team and you've one position left at centre half forward. Do you go Joe Canning, Tony Kelly, or TJ Reid? Damien?
I'd go with Tony Kelly. Just, I've always said this, I'd play Joe Canning full forward. lads can laugh. I would love to see Joe full forward, edge of the square.
Oh, you're wriggling out with this now.
I'd love to see Tony Kelly centre forward.
Owen?
I'm current form, you'd have to say Tony Kelly, but imagine having Joe Canning on one wing, Tony Kelly in the centre, and TJ Reid in the other.
It's the ultimate, right? Oh. The ultimate. Well, no, like I'd go Garrod Hegarty as the wing and TJ in full forward, maybe, or Joe full forward.
You could have that as well. where was the player, Aaron Glan?
Aaron Glan, Patrick Horgan, and all we need now is one more corner. One more.
Yeah. I'll stand in at 15.
No, I wouldn't have you a corner forward. I'd put in Whelan. Whelan would be ahead of you.
That going shite then. I'd never buy the car off you again.
Come here, listen, lads. Sean Finn deserves one mention here before we finish up. He was brilliant on Desi Hutchinson, and we know how fast and selfless Desi is at running the lines and all that. Sean Finn, after an early point, pretty much put him in his pocket, and he had that brilliant interception on Callum Lyons, Owen, at the end. And with Richie English back as well, back in the squad, again, you know what I mean? Like, because maybe Prendergast gave Nash a couple of problems, but if you're thinking Nash is a potential weak link, now you have English back, who's, a double all-star at this stage.
Yeah. Sean Finn is a serious cornerback. Anybody that takes Sean Finn to the cleaners is going to earn it, let me tell you. But as you said, Desi Hutchinson got a good pint in the first half, but after that, he never got a sniff of it, really. And even when Waterford were looking for a goal, Sean Finn came in with a great interception there and just won a free just to steady things down again and take a couple of seconds. But he's a savage cornerback, and especially, you know, he's still hurling very, very well, even though the other two lads that he had on the full back line are not there anymore. You know, he's still standing up, and I know Dan Morris is doing a good job of full back and at the moment, but like to lose your full back and your other corner back that you've been playing with there for a number of years now, it can be upsetting. It can be, you know, it can kind of upset lads' form, but it hasn't upset Sean Finn. He's a serious horror back, and I wouldn't like to be trying to take him on now, to be fair.
Yeah, definitely. We forgot completely about Joe Canning, giving him a mention for performance at the weekend, and the sideline to Joe Cooney at full stretch. Jesus Christ, that was unbelievable. We've seen him doing that before with David Burke. It's like he used to have a little kind of a little tactic between the two of them that David Burke would take off and Joe would be able to pick him out. How hard, Damien, is that off a ball on the ground to be able to, I can imagine just getting that up off the ground and to be able to hit a moving target off a sideline like that. Like, I mean, it's incredible skill.
That's that would be incredibly hard. Just like if you picture just having a bow and arrow and you're trying to hit a moving object. So that was just unbelievable. And the run from Joseph Cooney and the catch with his two legs off the ground and thrown over the bar, like it was a lovely score. It really was. And Joe had a super game the last day. And he got 3 points from play, 2 sidelines, and whatever he got from frees, like this, he had a really, really, really good game. So he was actually brilliant the last day, so he was, in fairness to him. So he was. So it was just a pity. I've said it more than once, it's just a pity we didn't win it. But he had a super performance the last day.
That didn't just happen in Croagh Park, Willie. That has been tried a number of times in Salt Hill, I'd say, for us. To be able to hit a sideline like that, TJ Reid is very good at as well. Just nipping the ball into a lad's hand and maybe take it back or the man hits it over the bar. But to hit that moving target, and Joseph Cooney, he wasn't jogging either, he was sprinting.
So it
was a fast moving target he had to hit. It was pinpoint accuracy.
Yeah,
but here's the thing on that though, Owen, is that I see the technique when they're going for a pint off the sideline and they get down under it. But he was standing more upright when he did that one.
Yeah, I'd be looking to hit the ball at all, Willie. Leave it alone, get it off the ground. I'd probably pull me green if I tried that now. But as you said, he was standing upright. But like, you often see Joe when he's getting ready for a sideline, he kind of gets a bit of a divot into the ground right behind the ball, so that probably helps it as well. And he just had it at the right height for Joseph Cooney to take it on a run and slap it over the bar. It was some pint now, in fairness.
Yeah, it's almost like trying to hit a one iron, Damien. Very, very difficult.
Well, I know nothing about golf, so I can't comment on that, absolutely nothing. But if you just watch Joe or watch any of the lads that are really good at taking the sidelines, Woolly, right? What they do is they try to put the ball up on a nice little tuft of grass, right? And they then try have the rim at the bottom. This is just right. And then what they try to do is, you watch him the next time, he'll then get his hand and he'll flatten the grass underneath the tuft, so that when he does sideline it and he gets in, he's getting absolutely underneath the ball and he's like just shaving the top of the grass so the ball will travel, and he's hitting it with the grooves. When the next match is on and someone is doing, just watch the way the lads are able to get the ball to go at a distance, the way they're positioning the ball, the where the rims of the ball is, where they have it at the bottom, and then they're flattening the grass to get under it. It's a very, very important technique.
By the sounds of things, Damien, you're after getting a lesson off Joe Canning above in Port Humber.
Everything Joe knows, I taught him.
But we'll leave it at that one, Damien. Tony Kelly definitely is the performance of the weekend. I don't think anyone is doubting that. And I think at this stage, Tony Kelly might have won performance of the weekend at least 20 times on this show. So it's getting a bit boring.
And I think, Woolly, we should give Michael Breen an all mention for the Sylvie Lennon ginger tash. I thought it looked very impressive the weekend, so I did. Nicely trimmed.
Right. Eye from play and a moustache as well. So Michael Breen definitely gets the mention too. Right, lads, we'll leave it there. Thanks very much. And we'll be back on Thursday. We'll preview the 2 All-Ireland quarterfinals. So we'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken. I let it go, 'cause I wanna see you later, but not a lot of talking out.